this is sort of my complaint, but it's not really a complaint at Apple. It's a complaint about either us or the universe. That
narrowed
escalated quickly.
Sorry. By us, I don't mean the three of us. I mean us, like humanity.
Better.
Further narrows it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Bad Voltage, Season 3, Episode 71. It's been a hot minute since we last did this.
The return of the pod fade.
Yes, it is true.
Bury me while I just make... No, I'm not calling the show that. I was going to make a note, but I'm not calling it.
Return of the pod... We can't commit to anything, including pod fading. So I'm here with Stuart Ian Langridge and Jeremy Diddy Garcia.
Particularly unkind at the given moment. Actually, wow, that's a tough crowd.
Is that really insulting? I thought it was just a word, and I thought, oh no, hang on, isn't he in prison or something?
He is very, very much in prison.
Yeah, so yeah, we're gonna kind of dig into some fun things. What should we talk about? Do you want to kick us off, Mr. Langridge? We're gonna just go and do some news.
Sure. I mean, this is less news and more things that I have discovered. I made a note of a bunch of stuff for the show.
Okay.
But the first
that makes one of us.
I'm doing what I can to serve the listeners. But the main thing is there's this is something where I'd more like your thoughts, right? So there have been a few high-ish profile examples of government officials using commercially available chat systems to exchange information. And so the most recent high-profile one was a bunch of high-up American government officials talking on telemessage, which is a fork of Signal, and then inviting the guy who edits The Atlantic to their conversation or whatever.
Signalgate, as it was referred to.
Okay, yeah. But this is not exactly a new thing. I mean, there have been WhatsApp groups with loads of UK MPs in them and concurrent leaks of the same to the newspapers for years now. It's not the case everywhere because, for example, France have banned WhatsApp, Telegram, and Signal for ministerial use. They did it in 2022, right? So what I was sitting there thinking about is what should actually happen here? And this is why I'm interested in your opinions. Because, I mean, on the one hand, right, if I am fully on board with the idea that if the Minister of Defence wants to discuss with the Chief of the Defence Staff where to put the nukes, they probably shouldn't be doing it on ICQ, right? I get this. But equally, if I'm the MP for Wolverhampton East and I want to say to my aide on the way into the office, hey, I'm coming in to do surgery and I'm going to nip into Starbucks on the way, do you want me to pick you up a chai latte while I'm doing it? I feel like I should not have to do this on my secure bat phone using my secure messenger that was created by GCHQ. And at least partially, this is going to be because any government mandated secure messenger thing is going to be shit by comparison with commercial ones, right? Because they're going to say, I can't paste an emoji into it, or I can't paste images into it, or I can't do little videos or anything. And people say, that's not what it's for. It's there for you to share secure information about the nukes. But then if you do that, everyone's going to have non-secure conversations in WhatsApp, and those conversations are going to bleed into the sort of things you shouldn't be discussing on a commercial chat platform, right?
Mm.
And I don't think this necessarily just applies to government. Obviously, it applies to, you know, secret information. But also, if you're a big company, I mean, John, I'll take you as an example, right? If you were consulting with a large rival to Meta about how they're going to build out their community stuff to get ahead of Meta in certain places, would you feel comfortable having that conversation on Facebook Messenger?
No, not at all.
And that's the point. So it's not just should you be talking about where the nuclear weapons are on these platforms. It's there are commercial secrets which you want to keep secret too. And some of them say we do full end-to-end encryption and so on and so forth. But very few of those things have been actually verified. So you are sort of saying, Facebook going, we definitely wouldn't read any messages sent by the head of Google to someone else on our platform. And you've just got to trust them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But as I say, actual security bods would be like, oh, yeah, well, you have to use this terrible messenger system we've built, which doesn't do emojis and doesn't do images and doesn't do videos and doesn't do group chats, because we built it in 1992, because that's how long it takes to get everything approved. At which point, everyone's going to go, fuck this, I'm not using this, it's terrible.
Should I be concerned how interested you are in using emojis and nukes in the same sentence?
I'm going purely off the reported stuff in the Atlantic about Pete Hegseth and so on. They had little sort of wavy emojis about someone where they're going, you know, let's drop the bomb on this city or whatever, and someone was like, here's a thumbs up picture. I couldn't believe it.
To me, there's kind of two components to this. There is like the technology side of things and whether it's secure or not. And then, but I think the real crux of this in my mind is using judgment, right? Like, so the whole thing, the Signalgate thing, you know, when that whole thing blew up, it seemed to me like everybody was talking about they were using Signal, but to me, it seemed like the biggest problem here was really that they just used poor judgment. Like Signal as a platform, and I'm not an expert in this by any stretch of the imagination, from what I understand, is actually really designed to have these kinds of conversations. But the biggest problem here was who gets pulled in and how they get pulled in and how they're approved to kind of get pulled in. It seemed like they just yanked a bunch of these people in there because, like you said, Ak, I think it's like it was convenient. It was a convenient thing that they could use. It was on their phones. But to me, this is more of an issue with judgment. And I don't know how you solve that with technology.
I mean, I agree. In the end, you have to rely on the judgment of your elected representatives or the people they choose or whatever. I get that. But equally, part of the reason that a lot of rules are in place are to attempt to insulate the system from bad results when people display poor judgment. Like, you want people to behave properly, but equally, there are things like anti-corruption laws because you don't want to that shouldn't be the only thing you rely on is the integrity of your representatives, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think I honestly don't know. I sat there and thought about this and I don't know what I think should be the case, because I don't think you should make elected representatives' lives a misery because some bod from security comes around and bollocks them for talking about which coffee to have without using a secure government platform.
But we have existing data classification systems though, right? So it seems to me if you wanted to discuss your sandwich order using whatever platform you wanted would be fine. If you want to discuss something that is top secret or higher, using an app where you cannot accidentally add a reporter seems like good security posture to have in general. And it's part of like a defense in depth. That's not going to stop everything, but that seems like a minimal set of requirements would be, I cannot accidentally add random wrong Jono. And then suddenly someone who writes news for a living has access to a very private, very sensitive information. If you added them to the sandwich order, maybe they'd chime in and get on your sandwich order and whatever. But like that seems like not all that bad.
So I appreciate, you know, I brought like nukes into the conversation or whatever, but there's a whole bunch of information which I feel like is sensitive, but not in a military classification way. If you're talking about, okay, we're going to change the law so that no one gets benefits anymore or something, and you're discussing that amongst the cabinet, that's not classified like, you know, where military bases are or whatever. I don't even know if there is a classification system for that kind of thing. But should you be discussing that on WhatsApp? I don't know. And there is obviously not a clear boundary there. And there's also the tendency of conversations to wander backwards and forwards. And you don't want people, and you don't want to be the guy in the conversations like, excuse me, I think this conversation is wandering close to things we shouldn't be discussing on an open platform. Let's move everything to the secure phones. And everyone's like, oh man, shut up.
There is also another kind of question in here around an audit trail, right? Like, without separating out us into an entirely different thread here, but, you know, I think it's good as a general rule that civil servants, or certainly, you know, our representatives, that there is some level of audit. So we can, you know, if something gets fucked up, then we can kind of go back and take a look and see what happened.
The whole Presidential Records Act thing. Reason I didn't bring that up is because I don't think most countries have got it. I don't think the UK's got it.
The idea
all the stuff that government officials write in the pursuance of their duties should be written down somewhere and people can look at it, even if it's only 50 years later. I think it's a bloody great idea, but I think it's a US-only thing. I don't think other people have got it at all. I mean, it's great.
Did we do a thing correct?
200 years ago. I'm not sure you did it correctly recently.
Surprised that it ever happened. It's great.
Did we do a thing correct, by the way? That is the title of the show.
I'm writing it down in the document now. But I think part of the thing here is you want compliance to be the path of least resistance, right?
Defaults matter, 100%.
And this leads into that sort of thing. So, yes, the idea that everything you converse about ought to be recorded somewhere for later audit is a brilliant idea. But you know what government-written internal software is like, right? Is it going to be as convenient to use as WhatsApp? No, which means people are going to be inclined to not use it. Because if for no other reason, then they have no competition. If you're allowed to mandate that everyone who works for, in your case, is the federal government, has to use the special government-only WhatsApp clone, then are they going to bother adding user features? No, because people can't go, well, screw this, we're moving to Signal. So,
but this is where, like, you, and I appreciate what I'm about to say here, is the most aspirational of aspirational things. But you'd think that the ideal scenario here would be Signal's open source. It's to take the open source project and modify it, have a private build for the government where, just as an example, if you want to add someone into a Signal conversation, you can only add people in who are, you know, somehow vetted. Like, so you can't add a regular phone number in. You can only add somebody in who's in, you know, the equivalent of a government LDAP, basically, you know, to kind of pull them in. Something like that would be a great way in which they can have the benefits of something that's easy to use, like Signal, but then where you can just, you reduce that risk, to your point. Like, I mean, I don't understand why this is not happening. This seems...
Well, I would ask someone at 18F, but they all got laid off, didn't they?
Well, that's a very good point, Mark.
But yeah, I don't know, like I say, My intuition on this let me down, because I sat there and thought about what do I actually think should happen here, and I didn't have a good answer, which is what, you know, I'm glad I'm not the person in charge of thinking about this for the government, or for a large corporation with commercial secrets they need to protect from the competition, when the competition are the ones running the chat app, right?
Yeah.
Do you have your secure conversation on how to unseat Google Chrome on meet.google.com? Do you trust Google to not be listening to this, or perhaps training their AI with it or whatever? I'm not sure you do. You know,
the only way to communicate in the future has to be TikTok. This is how they should be communicating with each other.
30-second videos backwards and forwards.
Pete Hegseth dancing and sharing military secrets.
I don't know. I mean, like I say, my intuition doesn't really lead me to anywhere. So what do you think what should we do about this? Your answer can't be politicians should have more integrity and not discuss secure things in insecure channels, because that's clearly not working as a policy.
Do you think the suggestion that Mr. Bacon made of just taking something that is pretty well respected, I think, in most communities from a security and cryptographic
Signal.
Perspective, like Signal, and having a custom build where it's like, now you're having a private discussion, this person doesn't work in the same agency. Like, it could have pretty prescriptive rules about different agencies and leveling and a whole bunch of things right into the modifications.
Things like disappearing messages, they could disable that, right? So if they do have to have an audit trail.
So
like, I think one of the main things that I see people doing with Signal is they like the fact that you can have like one day disappearing messages.
Yep.
So you can have a conversation and there is no record
and then
of
it's
it.
Gone. So, you shouldn't be able to do that in a place where the Presidential Records Act applies, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so first of all, as I understand it, telemessage, which is the thing that a bunch of people got busted on, is a fork of Signal. I think LibSignal, the underlying encryption stuff, is quite commonly used in other people's stuff. But I think more to the point, and this shades into an area I didn't particularly want to go into because it's straight up about politicians rather than technology. But right. Sometimes people don't want to have those conversations somewhere where they will be tracked. Now, that is straight up mendacious, yes. Right? People ought to be stopped from doing that. But the magic words to summarize that conversation are private email server. Which is exactly what that was, right?
That was that. By the way, you just had a can of worms inside of another.
I know,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Each worm has swallowed 100 more cans of worms. So we're not getting into that. And to a large extent, I don't want this conversation to bleed into what if people who are elected are deliberately trying to avoid these requirements. It's more like Jeremy says, the defaults. How do you nudge people into doing the right thing?
But you seem to be resistant to people in the government having to use a specific app. But if you work at almost any organization I've ever been a part of, they're very deliberate with, like, here's the system you use for this, Here's the system you use for that. So any job, that's just part of the job, right?
Okay, no, I'm going to disagree with that. I understand your point, but no one's stopping you from doing something else. Right, they're saying, yeah, you should have all these conversations on Teams.
I understand you haven't worked for a corporation for a long time, but if you think you can just install whatever you want on the average corporate laptop, I have some bad news for you.
Here's my phone. Right, unless you supply me with the phone and then prevent me from installing things, and if you do that, people are going to say, screw it, I'll just message you from my home email address or my home phone or, you know, my personal mobile phone or whatever.
Yeah, but then you might get fired for that. Right. You can't break those rules.
Right, okay, William.
But a lot of companies will say that if you share company confidential conversations or data on your personal device, you'll get fired.
Most companies, you can't even access company data on your personal device because you need it to be a managed device. And to be a managed device, you have to have followed all the rules they have. And it creates a separate workspace.
I certainly agree that a lot of companies say this.
A lot of companies do this, for sure.
Okay, well that was the point I was differing on, but maybe I'm just wrong about that. I mean, certainly, right? A lot of the people I work with, I need to be using an approved device that they've supplied in order to get access to their SharePoint installation or whatever, right? And yeah, it's really annoying. But you've got to do it, and that's okay.
The other thing as well I would say is you said that people who want to do something outside of that people are mendacious if they want to speak off the record, basically. I don't know if I'd agree with that because I think every human being will want some form of privacy, right? Like I know, for example, a lot of founders and executives at companies who will have conversations on a platform like Signal because they don't want to have it on Slack because
Are they discussing company confidential information in there? You've just literally said that's not allowed.
No. What I'm saying.
This is my point.
Sure.
But I think elected officials have different rules, at least in my perspective.
Right. I will grant you there may be one of the differences here might be it's actually different for government officials than it is for corporate officers or whatever. But exactly the point you just made is companies stop you from doing that. And if you don't do it, they'll fire you. And I think that's bollocks is my point, right?
What I'm saying is they'll do it at the executive level, but for staff, it's different. Executives will, I guarantee you that every company in the world will have their executive team on a Signal.
Yeah.
And guarantee it. But their staff don't get the same, they don't enjoy the same privilege.
And that's exactly my point. Honestly, I'm not really talking about whether some bod in the mailroom discusses with his mate something which would allow you to deduce how much incoming mail the company gets, which is technically a corporate trade secret, right? No, that's not what's relevant to this conversation. What's relevant to this conversation is maybe we're going to lay off half the company for lols and our bonuses go up. Should they be able to have that on a private channel? And if your answer is yeah, then your rule about every company enforces this is bullshit.
No, I didn't say that they enforce it. I didn't say that everybody was equal in this. I'm saying that for staff members, for the rank and file, to Jeremy's point earlier on, you have to use certain tools and you have to use certain devices. That's very common. I'm not saying that there isn't a different set of rules for the executive team, but the executive team have a different set of things that they have to discuss and consider as well. And I'm also not denying the fact that you may have horrible behavior occur in those channels too. Absolutely, it may. But I'm not saying, I would like to think that it's not all horrible behavior, that the usual discussion in those channels is actually relatively benign. And then you will get some horrible behavior, right?
I go further than benign and say banal most of the time in my experience, but yes.
I know we've got about 20 minutes that we're going to keep going for. Should we move on to something else? This should not be the whole show.
I was interested in your thoughts.
Yeah.
So here's what do you want to do next? Here's a small one, and then I want John to talk about the iOS 19 thing. But here's a little thing. Did you know about UDM equals 14?
I did not. I actually had to read it twice because I didn't think it could be correct.
Yeah, and you put basically, you remember how Google switched so the front page has a load of results from other stuff all pulled into it, and now you can go and click on web and get what Google searches used to look like 15 years ago? Well, if you put UDM equals 14 on the end of the query string, you get that. And if you want to, there's actually a page called, I think it's udm14.com. We'll link it in the show notes. UDM14.com, which explains to you how you can add a Google search with UDM equals 14 on the end of the query string as a custom search engine in your browser. So the search always takes you there and you don't get any of the other stuff. Not everybody wants this. Some people like having an AI lie to them at the top of all their search results. But if you don't like it, I think it's pretty cool that someone's worked out a neat way to do this until Google realized too many people are doing it and turn it off. But at the moment, it's quite cool.
It's like 1998 mode.
Yeah, it is. You know, back when you could do a search and get good answers, you mean.
But I'm curious why this exists.
Yeah, I'm
like, they put engineering work into making this work, and I'm curious what the genesis is. But they didn't
put engineering work into making it work so people were intended to use it, because otherwise it would be like good results equals true or something, right? It's very obviously a byproduct of the fact that they've put a switcher in, you know, they switch in based on something in the URL, which pane of the search results they're showing or whatever, and web just happens to be 14, and people have worked out how to exploit that. Nobody goes, how can we make this service useful to people? Let's make them put, I don't know what UDM stands for.
Apparently it stands for Unified Data Model. It's a parameter Google uses internally to control how their search results are presented. So now I want to look at UDM
13. Do it. It's probably just going to be image search or something, but you know. But I just thought I'd bring this up because I didn't know about it. And I went, ooh, that's good. So I thought I'd spread the word.
That is fascinating. That's amazing.
There you go. Not a big philosophical discussion about the ramifications of technology in the wider world. Just here's a cool tech tip. There you go. Right.
Tell us how you really feel about those AI summaries at the time.
I typed in UDM equals 15 and it said, it looks like there aren't any attractions matches on this topic. So it's default into things to do.
Hmm.
UDM 16.
What's attractions? It's like Tinder, but it built into Google.
I think it's like... I think it means like a tourist attraction type thing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah. You're just going to go through and go, oh, I made it up to UDM 211 by the next show or whatever. Yeah.
World's most boring game ever. That is interesting. Interesting.
Right. Jono.
All right.
Talk about the iOS 19 thing.
Yeah, let's talk about iOS. So I thought this was...
Jeremy's just fallen asleep.
So Mark Gurman, who's a pretty highly regarded journalist at Bloomberg, writes a lot about Apple leaks. There's him and that other guy, Ming Jung Kuo, I think his name is. And they're pretty reliable leakers and have been for many years. Mark Gurman especially.
Yeah.
And he's been talking for a while about how Apple are basically iOS is due to come out in, iOS 19 is scheduled to come out in September. And basically what they've done is they've refreshed the entire interface, or they're planning on a full interface. I think they're going to roll it out slowly. But they, what I thought was interesting about this is they're using the visual theme and style of the Apple Vision Pro. So if anyone's seen or use a Vision Pro, the user interface is quite beautiful. I mean, as all Apple interfaces typically are, but it's got this kind of like frosted glass look. And apparently this is nicknamed internally Solarium. And they're going to be starting to roll this out across all devices. So macOS, iOS, tvOS, iPadOS, the whole lot. You can actually see a little bit of it in place on the Apple TV, anyone who's got that, when you open up like the side menu. But I thought to myself, Apple seems to be visually adjusting and optimizing their OSs fairly regularly, right? But no, it turns out like the last time this happened was about 15 years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, I think it was.
Well, I don't think it was 15, but yeah, it was a while back. Do you not remember going through the last transition?
I didn't have an iPhone back then, so I wasn't really paying attention. Yeah. But now I do. But and you know, people are, you know, debating about, is it a circle or is it a square? Because they're going from like the kind of rounded corner squares right now for the icons, and it's going to be much more. People are nicknaming it a squircle.
They are great pains to point out they're not rounded corner squares; they're squircles.
Right, and I gotta say, I quite like that frosted glass kind of look of the Vision Pro. I actually used the Vision Pro for the first time about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'd not used it. It was good, heavy, but pretty good. But what do you guys think about this? Like, this has got to be a monumental lift for Apple, and also Google are refreshing their UI as well. I think I read like last week. I think they announced this at Google I/O, whatever it was. So. Yeah, what do you guys think about this?
I'm not sure why you would want frosted glass on your phone. I kind of get it for a Vision Pro, although I have not used a Vision Pro specifically. But this floating tab, between the floating tab and the way they're doing the frosted glass, I don't know what the utility is. It seems like change for change, not change for a better UI.
It's a good question. Like, why are they doing this?
And this is sort of my complaint, but it's not really a complaint at Apple. It's a complaint about either us or the universe.
escalated quickly.
Sorry. By us, I don't mean the three of us. I mean us like humanity.
Better?
Further narrows it down.
Because as far as I can tell, if you don't refresh your brand every now and again, everyone starts going, oh, well, it looks a bit old and tired and everything, even though it's fine, and people just leave it alone. So you just have to do this. And yes, it does feel a bit like change for change's sake, but equally, people want change for change's sake, because if you leave something alone, I think people start to be a bit grumbly about it. Even though they're also grumbly when you change it. I mean, why do you think companies keep changing their logos, right?
Because somebody wants to get promoted.
Yeah.
And same thing. Yeah. But I don't think, much as I'm, you know, I'm not necessarily on board with the whole, hi, we're a design agency who are going to charge you $10 million to take the words in your logo and slant them a little bit to the left. Thanks. Ka-ching. British Petroleum, looking at you. But
I think some people in the design world may push back on your characterization business.
And exactly.
But also, I'm not pushing back.
Yeah, exactly the point I'm trying to make here is they do have a point. Right? Refreshing your brand and your logo does, even though it probably shouldn't, it does give people a new view and make people think that your stuff is all a bit fresher and newer and cooler and they should get more involved in it, right? It works. The aesthetic usability effect is a real thing, even though it probably shouldn't be if we were all emotionless robots with no inner life whatsoever. It does work. So
it does. I think it has a huge impact, actually. Like, we've mentioned this guy. I learned about this guy through you, Mr. Langridge, Rory Sutherland.
Yeah.
Who, you know, talks a lot about
behavioral economics. Now he used to be very cool, but yes,
really. Oh, I've been marathoning his interview. All he seems to do is go on podcasts and talk about
yeah,
various things. He's very interesting to listen to.
He is.
But he basically talks about marketing solutions to deeper engineering problems. This is exactly the kind of thing that I think he would say, yeah, this kind of stuff is good. Like, yeah, you should do this. And it doesn't make a logic. There's no logical reason for this. But what I think is fascinating about this as well is that for Apple to change this, that impacts so many different types of people. And they've got to drip feed this out slowly. I would argue, and this is maybe not, honestly, I'm not even sure if I'm right about this, but I would imagine that Apple devices tend to have a generally less technical audience than Google. Like, I would imagine, I think a lot of people who are more into tech will use a Pixel or a Samsung phone. But with Apple, I feel like, because they're more expensive, I think they tend to be...
A Google Pixel, maybe, not a Samsung phone.
Yeah, maybe you're right about that. I mean,
they're by miles the most popular manufacturer on Earth. You can't get that if you sell it to Linux
nerds.
I'm not
saying they're not popular. What I'm saying is, like, the level of how technically savvy the audience is.
If your opinion is that the vast majority of people are technically savvy, because that's who buys Samsung phones, everybody.
Yeah, all right, scratch that, you're right.
Yeah.
I revoke that comment.
Google Pixel, I grant you. What's interesting, Google stuff in general does tend to have a more tech-savvy thing. Apart from Google Search, go and look at the front page, google.com, which you probably never look at, right? You just type things into the address bar and end up at search results. But if you look at google.com, it looks basically the same now as it did 25 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a search box and a search button and an I'm feeling lucky button and the logo, and that's it. They're the most conservative people on Earth because it's the most contested internet real estate on Earth.
Yeah.
But all their other stuff, right, I agree with you completely. Anyway, sorry, carry on. I just want to bring it up.
I was just going to say, like, rolling out these changes, you've got to be super careful, right? Because even though it's just a visually different thing, this kind of stuff freaks people out and they don't know what it, especially those people who are less technical. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's fascinating watching companies make these kinds of changes and how they do it and how they approach it. Because you can't just drop that out there. You can't just change the whole thing. So I'm curious to see how they do it with iOS 19. From what I understand, like, the early changes on the iPhone are going to be things like, you know, the icons at the bottom of the camera app are a little bit different. But, like, the main UI is not going to change dramatically. So, anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I am distrustful of this kind of thing. Not necessarily because I dislike the visual design changing, because normally that's good. It's that... when people do stuff like this, they tend to smuggle in a bunch of other stuff that I don't want under cover of the change.
Apple, I think, are pretty good at not doing that.
Now they've killed all the Apple intelligence stuff, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. Fucking bad. Oh, it's so bad.
You see my point, right?
Oh my God, it's the worst thing. It's one of the worst products I've ever seen in my entire life.
Whoa, that's a bold statement.
It is.
It is beyond, it's just useless.
You've seen, let's be honest, between just the three of us and our million listeners, you've seen a lot of bad products.
I've seen a lot of bad products. I've owned most of them.
You've owned them with all of them, in fact.
what do you not like about it?
It just doesn't work. So Siri doesn't answer anything I ask it correctly. And often it'll like tell me to go to I've switched Siri off. I don't use it on any Apple devices. And as you both know, like, I'm all in on Apple, like the watch, the Mac, MacBook, the whole nine yards. But also, like, the only thing that I find Apple AI is actually useful for is in when you see notifications on your lock screen, is summarizing the thread. Like, let's say you get a bunch of text messages and it summarizes what those are into a sentence. That is helpful. There is nothing else. I don't use it anywhere else in any of my Apple devices. And I use AI a lot. Like, we, in my company, we use it for friggin' everything. So it's not that we're anti-AI. Just, I think Apple have completely balls it up. And to me, like, the brand Apple Intelligence has zero equity with me. Like, I think of it as a net negative now. I just think it's the shittiest AI rollout I've ever seen. Whoever did this at Apple, I was going to say should be fired, but I think they were fired.
I mean, do you think this is because Tim Cook and the execs at Apple don't really care about AI? Because isn't their motto for it? I'm a proud Pixel user, so I have never used it. Isn't it like AI for the rest of us? Isn't that their framing for it? Which makes me think they don't believe in AI. Tim Cook has probably never used AI.
I think they believe in AI. I really do. I think they care about it, but... I think Steve Jobs will be rolling in his grave because I think they just rushed it. I think they were so eager to get it out there. I think you can kind of pin this on Microsoft a little bit because I think Microsoft with Copilot, they move quickly because they had the advantage of already of working with OpenAI. So they move quickly and I don't know whether any of their shit is any good or not. I've not used it, but I think Apple rushed it and then they just completely screwed it up. Like it seems like whatever quality gates they have it had in place were wide open.
I am blissfully unconnected with this because my iPhone 13 mini doesn't do all the AI stuff, so I didn't get any of it, and it's great.
Dare I ask what iPhone they're on now?
Is it 16? Is it 17 about to come out?
Yeah. Oh, you're not as far behind as I would have guessed.
What's really disappointing is now the power socket on the bottom has stopped working and I can only charge it wirelessly. I should probably start thinking about another phone, but I looked literally this very morning for a phone the size of my iPhone 13 mini, and on the market made since 2002, there is one from a company that I've never heard of, and that's it. I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, it seems like the tiny phone thing is really not really a thing anymore. It used to be. Do you remember years ago? It was definitely a thing.
I agree
and
with
it's
you.
Logical.
I feel standing
people,
up for
hands.
Things. Like to be clear, it's not a tiny phone. It's a normal size phone, and you've all got massive phones.
Get like the Motorola Razr. It flips. It's small. It's great.
I actually looked at the Motorola Edge 60 this morning, and it's huge. I think folding phones are. Have you used a folding phone for real? Not just like someone showed you it in the pub and you went,
"Oh,
it folds."
Like 1995.
No, one of the ones with like the folding screen in the middle and stuff. Not a bloody clamshell phone, you div.
Why are you so derisive of these folding phones?
They seemed, when they came out, very much like a solution in search of a problem. Like, it's an immense technological achievement to make a screen which can fold. I'm super impressed with them from an engineering point of view. But like, why do you need this? Because I don't need a phone which is half the size of a correct phone. And I don't need a correct size phone which unfolds to be a huge, great, big phone. So what's the point of it?
Oh, I disagree with you. So for you, like, given the fact that you have your tiny Donald Trump hands, I think you should get one of those phones that's a normal phone that's folded in half. Because that'd be perfect for you. Because then if you want to do something, you want to play a game or you want to reply to an email or whatever, you can lift it open, right? For me, when Apple are apparently going to bring out their folded phone in the next couple of years, and it will be a normal phone that goes like to a big square kind of thing. This is not quite a tablet, but a square.
Yeah.
I would love that because I hate, my thumbs ache when I'm typing on a normal phone. And I think it'd be good. I also watch a lot of video, like watch a lot of YouTube. I could imagine like opening it up to the wider form factor and being able to watch a video more nicely. I can totally see the benefit of it.
Oh, okay. No, I mean, this is...
Each to their own.
I have no technological quarrel with folding phones. I just think they're pointless. It's like, why would you want this? But sure, I don't watch telly on my phone.
Right. And given the fact that you would prefer a smaller form factor, I would have thought that something like the Razr would be... Wouldn't that be good for you? Like, wouldn't that be...
I would have thought...
But then either it's a phone the size of my 13 mini, which I'll just never unfold. So why is it costing me £1,200 to have a phone with a folding screen in it?
That's a good point.
Or it's a phone which is a bit bigger than my thing and then folds down into a little square box, which means the screen isn't big enough to actually read any writing on it.
You know what I love about this whole conversation is that as you continue to be a crankier and crankier old man, that in like 15 or 20 years ago, you're going to have one of those big phones that doesn't do anything with those massive buttons.
I 100%
you're gonna
go
from small
am.
Phone to massive.
I 100% am going to have that. I'm going to have this thing. Right. Okay. Anyway, right. I think we're done, are we?
I think we're done. It was lovely catching up with you, fellas.
Fabulous. Yes. We'll try not to make it as long next time, but things have happened this year. So,
yeah.
But we're doing what
this
we can.
True,
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you. We should say thank you to Marius.
Yes, thank you, Marius.
Thank you.
Of nerdzoom.media, who is doing our editing, although less editing than he necessarily thinks he has to do. Because we keep going, no, we had to skip it this month because. But, yeah. It's. But I do have a note at the top of the show notes which says, Jono, change your recording bitrate from Marius. After we've now got to the stage where he's giving up giving Jono kickings about it and giving me a kicking about Jono.
This is true. Yeah.
A resident audio engineer typically does not get it wrong.
Now I've finally worked out which side of the mic to type into. He's got to move on to someone else, and you're in the chair, Mr. Bacon.
Marius is a very nice guy to work with, but if you have fucked up your audio for 6 or 7 years consistently, his patience starts to run out.
He does start to lose patience with you a little tiny weeny bit, yes.
Yeah.
So. 300 episodes in, still don't know how mics work. It's excellent.
I know, but yeah. You'd think we'd get the hang of it after a while, wouldn't you? But yes.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you soon.
Peace out.